Good morning, or good evening, or good afternoon, good day, wherever, whenever you find yourself. I'm just happy you found your way here with me. I'm Colin Whitlock, and I am sitting down with Clark Durant today. Actually, that's not true, and that's the reason why I'm having this little opening bit to explain that I sat down with Clark to have this conversation almost 6 months ago, September 5th, 2024. We had a fantastic conversation. We just ran into some trouble in the second half, and so we decided it wouldn't be a big deal. We would just get back together, readdress some of the topics that we covered and re-record, and then we put out both halves of the conversation. No big deal, bing, bang, boom. Turned out to be much harder than we thought to get together and re-record. Clark and I have hung out on many occasions since then, but just never with the microphones turned on so that we could finish up this episode. So this has been sitting on my computer patiently waiting to be put out for way too long. And so I'm going to put out the first half now, and that second half will come. Clark and I have made plans to re-record, and so that will come out when it comes out. But I don't want to sit on this first half any longer. It's beautiful. I really enjoy it, and I think you will too. So thank you for your patience, even though you didn't know you were being patient. You were. And I hope you enjoy this episode with Clark. He is a really wonderful person. He's got a beautiful heart, a brilliant mind, a strong spirit. He contains multitudes, something that I really value in a friend. He can approach serious topics with the appropriate consideration, but at the same time, he has the capacity to devolve into giggles and boyishness with me and kind of goof around. And that's, I think that's really an important quality to have, especially in the atmosphere we find ourselves in. We need to be able to take on serious subjects and face them with a strong spirit and with a hardened mind and open hearts. We also need to be able to take a break and goof and laugh, make immature jokes, and I love that that freedom with Clark. He allows for that, and it's not like he, you know, you sit down with him and he says you're allowed to be a goof. You just can tell, you know, it's welcome, and so there's a lot of that in this conversation. We cover a lot of serious topics, and then, you know, devolve into our giggles here and there as well. So I hope you enjoy it, and I thank you once again for being here. Quick plug for our sponsor, Crooked Path Forge, founded by blacksmith, artist, visionary, storyteller, all-around incredible human being, Jordan Borstelman. You can go to crookedpathforge.org and have the option of buying some beautiful, handcrafted knives, axes, steel and iron work art. You can also sign up for workshops taught by Jordan, who I can attest is a brilliant teacher, really fun and engaging, and definitely challenging. He will show you that you can do things that you don't think you can do, which makes him a wonderful teacher. Go to crookedpathforge.org, check out what Jordan has to offer there. You won't regret it. And if you choose to buy anything, you can use Find a Ways special promo code Find a Hammer to get 10% off your purchase. So go check it out. And if you want to check out a little bit more about Jordan, go look at episodes 22 and 23 of Find a Way, because Jordan sat down and spoke with me, and we had a great conversation. He's fascinating. I got a lot of great feedback after my episode with Jordan, all of it praising Jordan, wanting to know more, and I actually received the most criticism in that I think because I know Jordan and because I sit with him and have talks like this with him on a semi-frequent basis. You know, there were certain things that he was mentioning that I thought, like, yeah, I know that about you. But I had people reaching out saying, like, why didn't you ask him to elaborate on some of these things? And for example, Jordan is a very spiritual person. He identifies as a pagan. He worships many gods. And I think that's incredible. Or I shouldn't say it's incredible. I think it's really intriguing. And I love that about him. I learned so much from him because of his spiritual beliefs. But the critics were right. I did not ask many follow-up questions to some of the things that he was talking about, and it would have been fascinating to dive deeper into some of those topics. So rest assured, Jordan will return. He has expressed interest in coming back, and I am obviously interested in speaking with him again. So he will return. You will learn more. In the meantime, check out crookedpathforge.org. See if you can get yourself a class. He's offering many workshops on making axes, knives. You can forge your own hammer. It's a really fun time. I recommend it. Highly recommend it. Crookedpathforge.org. Use promo code FINDAHAMMER. Thanks so much for being here today. I hope you enjoy this first half of my conversation with Clark Durant. This is a conversation for the record. This is a community of friends, family, and neighbors. This is a podcast hoping to capture some of the beauty that holds it all together. I'm Colin Whitlock, and this is Find a Way. Our guest this week is musician, entrepreneur, teacher, political and peace scientist, Clark Durant. Clark is a wonderful soul to explore with. He's chock full of wisdom, both ancient and modern. He's a thoughtful dad who models self-care and curiosity to his children. He's energized and energizing, which makes him an invaluable member of our community. And through his company, Thrive Circle, he helps others tread the path of self-improvement one step at a time. So thank you, Clark, for sitting down with me. And thank you, listener, for finding your way here today. Enjoy.
Right. But yeah, I love it. It's like, I think that we don't, the ear is like connected into the heart space in a way that's different than what the eye is.
Oh, yeah.
And so the audio for me is like having, it's like an audio first experience. Because, you know, what, I don't even know, like maybe the nose is like even more connected in, but it has a much more limited vocabulary that you can create for somebody, you know, like you could have a meal that reminds you of your childhood or something like that.
Right.
In a really vivid way that hits you. Maybe, but like there's something about, this is Puma coming into the conversation.
This is Puma coming to visit. Hi, Puma.
There's something about the audio, the ear, that is just like really powerful because of how connected it feels, but also you can access it with music.
That's an interesting point you bring up. Your sense of smell and your sense of taste are classically related to nostalgia and memory. It's considered like one of the most effective means of connecting to past memories and things like that. Those smells, those tastes. I haven't considered other connections related to the other senses, but I think you're right. Both audio and the reflection, the vocal cords, which involve audio.
Yeah.
I feel as though they connect so strongly to, you know, my heart, I guess, for lack of a, you know, more accurate term, like my center, my soul center, whatever you want to call it. I think it's one of the reasons why I love talking so much and singing. And one of the reasons why I love discussion so much and listening to music and things like that. They evoke such visceral reactions within me, you know, crying, anger, I don't know, reflection in general, just it, the things I hear and the things I say generally lead me the most on this path that you and I seem to share or to have a shared passion for.
Yeah.
And sight is sort of like this weird other, right? You know, it's, I feel as though sight might be, I know that there's illusion everywhere with sight, with hearing and taste and feel. Sure. And everything like that. There's illusion everywhere, but sight seems to be like sort of the king of illusion, the king, sort of like, you know, don't believe what you see, you know,
right.
Only what you, at least for me, I find that it feels more comfortable to believe what I feel than to believe what I think or what I see.
Yeah.
And when I hear something and it rings true, that phrase is very apt for it. It rings true because it like, there's almost feels as though there's a vibration with it.
Yeah.
That just says like, this is good. You know, I felt that that's something I associate with, getting to know you, which has only, I think I've only really known you on more than a surface level. I think it's probably only been what, like a year or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah.
And that is something that I experienced in that this ringing true of like, this person really feels as though they're doing a good thing, trying for good reasons, you know, and the space we share together and the feelings we shared together seemed very heart forward.
Yeah.
You started off talking about, or you started this bit of our conversation talking about like the maybe feeling some impatience while you were packing a lunch, or maybe sure. playfulness while you're packing a lunch. You are somebody in my life that I really value because you're so present with all of your experiences and like discussing them like that, like being vulnerable to say like, yeah, I was feeling impatience with my kid. Whereas I think a lot of parents are pressured to feel as though like, no, I always love being around my kids. It's great. This is the greatest job in the world. And
sure.
And it can still be the greatest job or the greatest responsibility, the greatest gift in the world, to also feel impatient and to sit with it and say, I felt some impatience today with my kid. And,
yeah.
You know, and to talk about it as though there's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's interesting. For me, I'm definitely trying to find, there's a couple of things that come up there. I'm definitely trying to find the middle way as it relates to, you know, hard feelings, difficult thoughts, that
yeah.
kind of, yeah, let's say it's the feelings in particular, in that, at one extreme, you're ignoring those, you know, those feelings, moods as they arise, and you're just kind of keeping your eyes on the path, whatever it is that you're trying to do. And maybe to where like you're denying that you're feeling something at all there. And then I think at the other extreme, is where people really identify with their feelings and they think that their feelings are the truth and the whole truth of the thing.
Right.
And get lost in those feelings and even provoke themselves to keep feeling the feeling and prolong the feeling
right.
and make the feeling into an identity and all those things. So I view those as kind of like the two extremes, and I'm trying to find my way down the middle of the road where I recognize my feelings as messages or signals from my body that are pointing to things that I can take in and process, but they're pieces of a puzzle and there are other pieces that I need to grapple with.
Sure.
You know? And so that's kind of one frame, is like trying to find the middle of the road. And then the other frame is like, you know, yeah, we need to be able to grapple with the dark stuff and the hard stuff and honor those things, not turn away from it, because there's like, you know, there's wisdom there too, and there's connection there too.
Yeah.
And we get into trouble when we try to say, or I get into trouble when I try to make myself too pure. And what that leads to is like this sense of like, I'm a good person and, you know, other people are bad people if they're not doing what I'm doing.
Sure.
Something. I mean, it leads you to reject the difficult things that you see in other people if you're rejecting them in yourself.
Certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, those are sometimes the most visceral ones.
Yeah.
You know, when the yes. ones that you see in yourself, you're like, stop doing that.
Oh, yeah.
You make a really important point about the fact that like what we feel is true isn't necessarily the truth, or the truth, capital T.
Sure.
Which may be, as far as I can tell, it might be, you know, something that we can never really reach, is that capital T truth. But at least like in this plane of existence. But you're right in that, like, the way I think of it, these things that I feel are true, or the things that I feel that kind of buzz within me, instead of me identifying them as like, this is what is true, I identify them more as like, this is like, it's more my compass. It's more like, okay, well, I'm going to go in this direction. This is what I'm being drawn toward, this thing. And I almost like, if my life's journey is mapped out on an atlas, and I'm trying to get from Gainesville to, you know, to Alaska, the idea isn't to go in a straight line to Alaska.
Right.
My path might take me to, you know, Texas, and then New York, and then to Canada, and maybe Paris. And then, you know, like, to there might be all these like twists and turns that are not the most efficient way, but it's the only way. Mm-hmm. And so these things that I feel that could easily be mistaken for truth are really things that like, I have to go this way so that I can understand this thing. And I look back at so many times in my life where I've felt truth about something that was so wrong. Right. And those moments of realization, like, oh my gosh, I've been wrong this whole time, have been integral to my growth. They've been so important. And some of them I've walked away with shame. Some of them I've walked away invigorated, you know, that, but maybe always invigorated, but, the idea that being wrong can be as important as being right is such a relief, you know, and it takes off so much pressure to like always be pure and on the right path. Like, if I'm fighting the thing that I'm feeling, that's, I think, the only way that I can be off the path, you know, is, and maybe not too, because maybe the fact that I'm fighting it is part of the path
part
too.
Of it too. You know, yeah.
It all falls into the same basket.
It's so interesting. So there's this great book called Being Wrong by a woman named Catherine Schultz, who's she's kind of like a science journalist, writes nonfiction books. And I love this book so much. But one of the things that she says in there, and I'm not going to get it exactly right, but it's basically like, what being wrong feels like is being right up until the moment when you realize you're wrong.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
You know? So,
yeah.
So, it's so interesting, 'cause it's like, that's what it feels like. It feels like, of course this is the way, of course I see it, the truth, of course I'm one of the good ones, you know, this type of thing. Like, that is what it feels like to be wrong, right until you see that you're actually wrong.
Okay, for the listener, pause the podcast and just sit with that for a second. That's so simple and yet so mind-blowing. Being wrong is what it feels like to be right up until the moment you realize you're wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so
it's intoxicating. It's, you know.
Totally. So for me, this is like, So that the sense of like righteousness, you know, where like I am right. And because of that, my, you know, I license my anger. I license, you know, a little bit of messiness or sloppiness around the truth. I license my, who I'm supporting or allying with. Right. Because I'm in the right and I'm one of the good ones. And so it is like a, it's fire, you know, you're playing with fire that, and, yeah. So there's something really beautiful for me about what I look for is like all the small little ways in which I'm wrong every day, you know, just like little things, and where I was kind of sure I was right. And then it turns out like it was my mistake kind of thing.
Yeah.
And trying to really take delight in those, because those are pointers back to like, not only am I wrong in the small ways, I'm probably wrong in some of the big ways too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they're so pervasive. And like, so in this moment, I'm like, if I were to try to pull an example, you know, it would be the kind of thing like, okay, so I've got lots of examples with Puma here, my cat. You know, a common thing that would happen would be she's going to come to my door in the middle of the night and be crying, like whining in this tone, like a, that's like a baby's cry for me, where it's really hard for me to ignore.
Yeah.
Okay. And some of the time when I, if I go out there and check on her, she just, you know, wants to play.
Of course. Yeah. Right?
And it's 3:30 in the morning and she's like, hey, come play with me.
Yeah.
And I will, you know, I'm there for that sometimes, but, but other times I'm really not trying to encourage that.
Yeah.
So, but there is like this discernment where she won't go away and she just keeps on going. And there've been a few times where I, when I hear that there's that extra little level to it where I listen to it and I come out here and there will have been something obvious that I have done that has created the situation. So like I, her food bowl is empty would be kind of like the obvious one, or, you know, like I thought that I had opened the cat door so she could go in and out, but it's locked. And so there's no, she's an indoor outdoor. There's no litter in here. She needs to go to the bathroom, dude. Like, you know, like let your cat out. So it's, and that there, those are like the little trivial ones where, she's behaving in a way that actually reflects directly back on me.
I see.
But, yeah, there kind of been some bigger examples of that too, with Puma in particular.
Interesting. Do you feel as though you have like sort of a special connection with Puma?
Yeah, I think I do. And I'm not, what's funny about this is, what's funny to me is I didn't view myself as a cat person. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm a cat person now, but I'm definitely a Puma person.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean.
And there was this process for me of learning to really love her, and took me up right here. So it was during the pandemic, she showed up at on the side porch and my kids were excited about her just dropping by as a stray from the neighborhood. And so they started putting milk out for her. And initially I don't even think I was like, guys, don't give her any milk or she's going to keep coming back.
Right.
And then at some point I relented and we started giving her milk, and then she did keep coming back. And then at some point it was clear she was just the most loving, nurturing, cat.
Yeah.
And she kind of won me over to where I was like, okay, she can sleep on the back porch and we can feed her and she can become our cat. So she becomes our cat over the course of, you know, a couple of years, and she lives out on the back porch, because I don't want to let her in the house because I'm not a cat person.
Right.
Okay. And I don't want, she might have, you know, fleas or whatever. And I don't want that in my house.
Sure.
And so, for a long time, that's what we do. She sleeps on the back porch and, you know, we mostly just play with her outside. And my master bedroom here is adjacent to the back porch. So I can hear everything that's happening on the back porch. And what would happen fairly regularly is that we would get raccoons coming to visit in the night, because there was cat food out there.
Right.
So this happens. And, you know, basically most of the time, Puma would just kind of handle it herself. I could hear some interaction, but she was clearly okay. She was like perched. We had her set up on this high kind of bar table so that she had a height advantage and she was up in a place where not with her food, where like they could come and get her food, but
she could be safe.
She could be safe. And so there were all these moments, like I'm going to say more than 100 when I heard raccoons come and visit and she was totally fine.
Yeah.
And it just got me lulled into this sense of like, okay,
that's okay.
This is fine.
Right.
And then there was this one night, and this was probably just a couple of years ago now, where, I heard the raccoons come. So sometimes I would get up and go out there and just like scare the raccoons away. And sometimes I wouldn't, and she would be fine. And so it became something that I would occasionally do, but not always. And again, I would just be like listening for what does this sound like to me?
Yeah.
So on this one particular night, I hear something awful and it's like a scream. And it sounded to me like, in my mind, the raccoon had Puma by the throat kind of thing. So I run out there. I run out there as fast as I can. And I see the raccoon taking off into the woods. And I think, and I hear this sound, like this awful scream. And so I just chase the raccoon into the woods in the, you know, in the dark of night in my underwear. Yeah. Like, let's go. And I was just tearing back into the woods trying to catch the raccoon. And so it just gets deeper and deeper into this thicket back there where I couldn't get through and figure out where it was. And so I ran back in the house. And I got a machete and a flashlight and some pants. And I ran back out
there. In that order.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And I ran back out there. And so I was like hacking my way through, but the sound stopped. Yeah. And so there was this moment where I was like, oh, shit. Like, she's dead now. And she's dead because I'm not a cat person.
Man.
And so I was, my kids were here in the house sleeping. And there was, I was calling her name and, you know, hoping that I was wrong about it and whatever, but that it didn't seem like that. And I did something which like I wouldn't normally do, which I like prayed to God. I was like, please give me my cat back.
Yeah.
And I said, if you give me my cat back, I'll let her in the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, which is funny. It doesn't, it's not like a fair deal. You know, that's all I have to offer. I'll let her in the house. And so, but that I like felt that very earnestly, like that this was mine and that I was responsible because of this hang up that I wasn't going to let her in the house where she would have been safe. And so I'm like, you know, weeping in my bed for a few hours thinking that she's dead. And then, I go out there in the morning just to see, you know, is maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she'll come back. She ran away. And if in the past, she would always be there in the morning. And so I went out there at the time when normally I would feed her, and I called her name and nothing.
Yeah.
And so I texted the kid's mom and I was like, I think Puma died last night or got killed last night. And right after I hit send, I heard this little meow at the back door.
Oh, man.
So it was so funny. So, you know, she didn't have, she had like not a scratch on her. So it was not like, it wasn't like she gotten dragged back there and escaped or something like that. It's, you know, I explain it to myself that like I made a deal with God and like God delivered.
Right. Like
that's kind of what
she showed up.
She showed up
brand new.
Wow. You know, 9 lives and all that, but it was magical. It was just like, it didn't make any sense based on what I heard and saw.
Yeah.
And she's totally good. And she just like throws herself at my feet and wants me to rub her belly kind of thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And so I was like, oh Lord, I have to do my part on this. Yeah. I have to like take her into the house.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we added a cat door. We created a spot for her to sleep in here. I just kind of did my part to
went all in,
bring her in. That's it. So that's like so since that point, I try to pay attention to Puma in particular, but like, I think to all of the creatures in my life that to look and see, is there some choice I'm making that is preventing me from really loving them more fully and like learning what they have to teach me.
Wow. And I feel like in addition to getting your cat back, you got this like life altering experience to recognize like, you know, I thought I wasn't a cat person and I guess I'm a cat person, you know, like,
no dude, I'm still not a cat.
Right. Would you say that you're more of a cat?
I'm
person?
More of a cat. Yes, definitely. Yes.
I have a ridiculously less spiritual connection that I'm making to this in my own experience. And it's like,
yeah,
it really pales in comparison, but I've lived most of my life assuming I'm not a roller coaster person.
Yeah, right on. Yes.
And like the only roller coaster I would ever go on for almost 40 years was Space Mountain. For some reason, that one was like okay in my book. So I'd go on that the 4 times I've been to Disney, I would go on Space Mountain. And I don't know, probably 4 years ago or so, my mom got us passes to go to Islands of Adventure or Universal, that whole double, whatever that whole land is. And Audrey was so excited to go on the roller coasters because she's a roller coaster person. And I was like, you're going to have to go alone. I'm not a roller coaster person. You know, I don't know what it is. I just don't do it. And she, leading up to the trip, she was working me. She was really like, come on, you got to try one. You got to whatever. And she broke me kind of. She convinced me that, you know, maybe I should try these one. If you can do Space Mountain, maybe you can do this other one. And my thing was like, I don't want to go upside down for sure not doing that. And I'm not sure about some of these like wild, crazy turns that they're doing. I don't know. I just don't think I'm a roller coaster person. And so the day came and I had agreed, I'm going on at least one roller coaster with you. And we got there really early in the morning and I was like, let's get it over with. Let's just do it right off the bat. Mm. And so we went to, I think it was the Rock and Roller Coaster that's at Universal. And it's one of these ones where like we were standing in line and I'm looking at it and I'm like really kind of freaking out a little bit internally and probably externally too, because I can see that it's one of these ones where when you start the ride, they like click you up almost in at a 90 degree angle up. Like it's straight up into the air that they're taking you real slow. And then you've reached this top and you just drop. And then there's all these other crazy things that you can see happening. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know. And right up until we walk up to like be boarded on, I'm thinking like, I might have to dip out. I might have to like, I don't think I can do this. And I push myself, I get in and I'm sitting next to Audrey. And like, one of the things they do to distract you on this ride is that you get to pick the music you're going to listen to while you go on the ride. There's this like little console in front of you. You can like go through and pick out some rock and roll music to play. And I think I picked a Led Zeppelin tune. It was either that or Aerosmith. And I'm like, we're going up, clicking up. And I'm like, oh my God, I wish if I could get off right now, I would. And we tip over the top and drop. And I scream bloody murder, just like as hard as I can. Yeah. I am freaking out. And by the time we hit the bottom, I am laughing hysterically. And I'm just like, almost like manic, like, ah, ha, ha, this like sort of, and I freaking loved it. I just went the whole time, like screaming, like, whoa, you know, this crazy experience. And that day we went on every roller coaster we could. We went on the Hulk. We went on like, you know, you name it. We went on it and we've been back a couple of times. I hate going to theme parks. I'm not a theme park person.
Sure.
the crowd and just like the high cost of everything and how they're like pulling every penny they can out of these like poor families that are barely able to afford to come. Yeah. It just makes me such a grump the whole time. I'll just like look at these people and think like, I'm so sorry that you have to do this. And I'm sorry I have to do this. But when we step onto a roller coaster, I just lose it. I just, and like now I find myself, they added a new one there. Some in the Jurassic Park, zone or whatever, and it's like one of the fastest roller coasters ever, and you go upside down and do all these crazy things, and I'm like, we gotta go on this one, it's gonna be so crazy. And you know, I convinced my dad to go on some of these that he hasn't really gone on roller coasters in a long time, and I'm just like, it's so much fun. And also, and it's like such an interesting addition to how I think of myself that I still have trouble, sort of like what you're saying, is like, I have trouble saying I'm a roller coaster person. 'Cause if somebody were to tell me like, there's a new roller coaster up in Atlanta and it's great, you got to go on it, I would do it, but I'd still be like, I don't know, I'm not, this might be too crazy for me. And then I'd get there and I'm sure it would just
rock, love it,
you know? Yeah. Something. Yeah. But, what a strange experience to go through such a huge chunk of my life thinking like this thing isn't for me.
Right.
And then to like have this sort of like, I don't know, like losing my mind experience to realize, no, this is fucking fun. This is so much. What a blast, you know?
I love that. That really resonates with me. And, yeah, there's at both kind of levels of that, like in the roller coaster thing in particular, it totally resonates.
Yeah.
I love just losing it on the roller coaster with my kids, and they have each kind of gone through like being scared of them and now just loving them so much. And so it's been fun to be like also do that with them and see that happen for them. Yeah, but it's such a, in a, you know, it's such a experience of just surrendering to your fear. Like that's what they're built for. Like that is the, you know, if you didn't have that fear up front,
yes,
like then on some level they're not doing their job. Like,
yes, yeah,
you know, that's part of what it's meant to take you through. But you know, I don't know, man. It is, it's yeah. How many things are like that in our lives where we have a belief that like, this is not for me, you know, or people like me, but then on the other, and so we never get to falsify that theory,
right?
Because we don't try it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's just another time where it feels right, but we're wrong.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Nice.
And it's interesting, the more momentum I have to face those fears, the more opportunities I get to surrender to them and sort of, it's funny to say surrender to my fear feels as though I'm not facing it, but at the same time I am facing it, you know, and to face it and to go through with something that challenges me to go through it. I can't think of many times where I've come out the other side where thinking like, well, I was right to be afraid. You know, it might be like I was right to be afraid of certain things. This time last year, I went on a rafting trip in Idaho. My friend Ari is a guide on this for this wonderful company, the Canyons River Company. Highly recommend taking a trip with them anytime you get a chance or you have the funds to do it. But Ari invited me to go on this sort of Canyons family and friends trip. And they guided along with a bunch of other guides that are there. And each day, it was a week-long trip, and it was in the Middle Fork of the Salmon River in Idaho. And each day, you had the option of being in a raft with a bunch of other people and a guide would be steering us through, or you had the option to be in a ducky, a kayak, and to steer yourself and to go through the rapids on your own. And I was so scared to do that, to be alone in my kayak, being, you know, having no experience with rapids, you know, or at least on my own. I had one time when I was a little kid that I was in Arizona, we went on a rapids tour for like 2 hours or 3 hours, but this was the only other time that I'd done it. And I thought like, if I fall out of my kayak, I don't know if I'm going to be able to like keep my head, you know, straight enough to keep my feet up and to do all the things that they teach you. You know, they sit you down and say like, okay, if you fall out, you do A, B, and C. And I'm like, okay, good luck remembering this when it happens. And so I kind of just told myself, you know what, I'm just going to be in the raft with the group each day and I'm just going to relax. I'm going to watch and I'm going to experience. And there was one day where there was an extra ducky. It was like 3 days into it. There was an extra ducky and there was too many people who wanted to go in the big rafts and they were looking for somebody to go. And I thought, all right, fuck it. You know, I'll do it. And as I'm getting in, they're like, by the way, one of the first rapids we're going to hit today is probably the biggest one we've done so far. And it's the biggest one except for the last one of the trip. And so, you know, good luck. And I'm like, fuck, God, this is, you know, I was so scared. My hands were shaking a little bit, like getting in. And my friend Ari was so supportive. And so they believed in me fully. And so I kind of held on to that a little bit. And so I'm in the raft and we're approaching the big drop. And I was so scared, and it kind of felt like getting onto the roller coaster and going up straight up into the air, you know, thinking like, what have I done? Like, I can't get out of this now. Technically I can paddle to the shore and be like, guys, come get me, you know, but I'm not going to do that. And I'm just getting closer and closer, and I've already stopped paddling. You know, I'm trying to like do whatever I can to like hold up and slow myself down. And there is a moment where I just thought, like, I'm doing this. I have to do this. It's going to happen. And I tried to like steel myself a little bit and quiet myself. And I had a beautiful experience where it's getting me, I can feel it's like kind of bringing it back up in me. I had this moment where I felt the presence of my dog Took, who passed away a couple of years ago, my best friend. And I'm sitting there in my boat, and it's not like I can see him with my eyes, but I perceived like he's sitting at the front of the ducky, and he's looking forward, and he's wagging his tail. He's all excited. And I felt so powerful. Mm. I felt like, I can't talk. I felt like I got that sort of like that. I don't know what word, like almost like losing my mind a little bit. I kind of was like, all right, let's do it. We're going to do this, right, Took? Come on, let's do it. And it was this like really like it was like going into battle, almost like losing my mind. So we're like, come on, bring it on. Let's go. It's going to be great. And I really felt like he was in there with me. We go through the rapid and like, it's scary as hell. And I get through and I don't fall out of my boat, and I get past it. And like I was the last one to go through, and the whole crew of people who I'm traveling with, they're all up ahead of me, and they're all clapping, and they're all woo, you know, and I'm so excited. And I feel this huge relief, this weight off my shoulders, and I kind of like lean back in my kayak, and I let the current take it, and I'm like spinning around, the kayak's kind of like turning slowly around in a circle, and I'm just looking at the land around me, and I'm looking at this beautiful place that I'm in, and I'm blissed out. I'm just overwhelmed with it. And I look at the shore, and again, it's like the same. I didn't see it with my eyes, but I could see in my other way, perceive, like Took is like running on the shore, like wagging his tail, and he's just so happy. And then I would turn around and I'd look at the other shore, and he's on the shore and he's running. And I was just like, I sobbed, you know, like 10 times worse than I am right now, but I just like lost it. And it was just, it was that feeling, I think, of, you know, like, I don't know, I wasn't a raft person, you know, I wasn't a whitewater person. I was like a safe person who didn't do these things. And I'm not that person now, you know, like, I was in the kayak every day after that, you know, every day. And then, like, there was a day where somebody really wanted to be in the kayak, and all of them had already been taken. And so I was like, okay, I've been doing this every day for every stop for like 2 or 3 days now. And so I let them take it, and I got into a raft with my friend Ari, and we got to this point where, you know, it was like we had some small rapids, and Ari turned to me and said, like, do you want to try steering the raft with everybody in it, this big, much bigger boat, and it's a completely different game? And I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. You know, never would have said yes before, but I jumped up there, and Ari, you know, kind of helped me out. They were my lookout, and I steered us through these rapids, and you know, I did a good job. I was, you know, better than I thought it would be, and it felt right. It felt like really invigorating. I was so proud of myself. I was so, I finished that trip just feeling so much more belief in my ability to do things, just because of these like little, not little, huge fears that I faced, you know.
Yeah,
the gorgeous reward is so great for that.
Yeah, 100%. I love that, man. That's that's powerful. And there is something about doing hard things where, you know, the better part of the experience is working through your own resistance and your own fear, and then feeling that love, like just being able to, in that moment of great challenge, to sense that you're not alone in it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I think that, you know, we need more of that. Like I think that is how we most often grow. And I think that is what brings the most joy and gratitude and satisfaction, when we are getting regular doses of things that scare us.
Yeah.
You know, and having to kind of work it through.
Well, and you seem to be someone who has a great drive to kind of create that. You've put so much work toward creating community so that we don't feel alone. You've really crafted such a unique connection between people in this town and beyond it, of course. But
thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. You know, I get to be a part of it, and it's I see it as sort of maybe an extension of what you're talking about. This, we're not alone. Like in my kayak, I wasn't alone because I had this, you know, inexplicable experience, just sort of a, I guess, spiritual experience, feeling the presence of my dog, my bud. But there's other versions of not being alone in this. And that's, I feel as though you do a lot to create that for us, at least on this level of reality, you know, like what we can see and touch
right
and
on.
Feel, you know, you're very intentional about that.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. It's like, what is, there's something about doing hard things with people that are also on their edge, and that people who care about you and that you care about them, that feels like it is, that's what we're, you know, built for, made for, like,
right.
That's kind of on some primal level, we, as humans are well suited for, taking on challenges in small groups of people who
right.
know each other deeply.
Yeah.
And when that happens, a lot of different, like kind of some of the most beautiful things about human beings rise to the surface, like pretty easily and naturally.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ways in which our modern world, such as it is, like isolates us. And then when it comes to isolates us, and then also empowers us in some crazy ways that are almost godlike, would be viewed as godlike relative to what our ancestors experienced.
Right.
Like the way that we, our phones and the information we have access to, and our ability to travel and, you know, see movies and share music and like all the modern artifacts that would just be inconceivable. So like we have these amazing powers, and at the same time we have all of the normal human frailty and fear and envy and shame and, you know, like all the same Paleolithic emotions. And so I think it's a particularly disorienting combination.
Sure.
Because you're like, you know, living mostly alone in physical space, like maybe with a few other people that you love. And then you have, in some ways, things seem pretty easy and pretty great and responsive to your beck and call. And I'm just going to order a car or send food over, you know,
right.
like this kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Right.
And then, but then on the other hand, like, why doesn't my relationship feel the way I believe it should feel? Why doesn't my child respond to me in the way that I believe they should respond to me? this type of thing. And that creates this real disconnect that I think is hard for people to grasp, because they, I think we now more expect things to be easy.
Yeah.
And if we were living, if we were hacking our lives out of the wilderness on the regular, and that was just part of, that was the baseline norm, then like these other things, I don't think would seem so challenging.
Right.
But take away all those challenges, and what we're left with is like some of the greatest challenges that we face now are in our relationships with the people that are closest to us.
Yeah.
And that's just a wild thing to feel like, okay, that's the only, that that's the space that is untamed and that isn't working for me the way I want or whatever.
Right.
And what a weird, weird thing to have, instead of that being like the place of refuge and support, it's often a place of frustration and alienation. And yeah.
Good point. Wow. Yeah. I mean, especially with the comparison of, you know, the origin of our, the current iteration of our species being that like home and togetherness was the ordered space, you know, and then we went out and macheted our way through the thickets to, to like survive, you know, and
right,
like,
to save our cats from raccoons everywhere,
right, everywhere, not wearing pants. That's
right. Pants aren't even an option.
It's
out
not
here.
Even a thing then. Right. But maybe that's the problem. But I mean, but like, yeah, that was the. I've been encouraging myself to do more thoughtful exhalations because they're so pleasant. Yeah, so pleasant. Sort of like my conversation with Clark. Thank you so much for joining me and for staying with us through part one. I really enjoyed that, and I look forward to part two. Clark and I are going to continue on some of the subjects we covered in part one, and of course lead ourselves into some new subjects. We're going to focus in on some of the things that Clark has been putting his energies into, his enthusiasm. That includes his music that he creates with Thomas Sparks and The Fire. And it also includes the business that Clark co-founded, co-created, Thrive Circle. You can find Thomas Sparks and The Fire music on any streaming platform, and you can also find more information about Thrive Circle at thrivecircle.com. You can also listen to part two, where the creator himself will explain all to you. So thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And come, you know, hop along over to the next episode when it comes. In the meantime, I'll remind you to support our sponsor, Crooked Path Forge. Go to crookedpathforge.org and use our promo code FINDAHAMMER to get yourself 10% off of any of the beautiful knives, axes, hammers, workshops, classes, anything that's on the website that you can buy. You can get 10% off by using promo code FINDAHAMMER. Thank you for being here. I'll see you in part two. And in the meantime, be well.